Welcome back to Peter Hill Explains, a podcast on things scientific. We're back again to the 2017 HSC physics exam question number one, which is a multiple choice question. Who was the main advocate for the distribution of DC electricity to cities? The choices are Edison, Faraday, Tesla, or Westinghouse. Now, I know in the last podcast, I've already given a podcast on question one. I'm going to revisit it and it'll start off with me walking back to a sheltered area because it's beginning to rain lightly as I walk around Glenbrook and you can hear the cars going past. Now, this time, I had to stop that podcast as I had to get up and look after a few people. But this particular one, I want to take it a little bit more slowly and get into a few points. Now, the fundamental idea of electrical energy, which is used in cities, is that electrical energy has a number of really convenient features. One is that you can convert one form of energy into electricity, transport a distance, and then transform it into another useful form of energy. So that's, electricity is a very desirable way to turn or to capture energy, transport it, and use it. So it's that transportability, and also once it's transported, you can control it very easily. So say if you have got a car or a flywheel, you have to use brakes and other mechanical means to control it, whereas electricity can actually be controlled with switches, and electricity can actually control itself, and that is computers and microprocessors can use it. Now the actual use of electricity is all, or electricity, electrical force itself, is ions or electrons feeling the force of an electric field or a magnetic field. So when it feels the force of an electric field, the electrons accelerate and then they can collide with a gas for a gas discharge or inside a metal for ohmic resistive heating. So the force, electrical force, on ions or electrons get converted into heat energy as they undergo collisions or they actually interact with the lattice. They actually collide with the phonons or vibrational structures within the lattice rather than individual particles within the lattice. That's in a metal. So you've got ohmic heating. You also have the electromotive force, the fact that an electron traveling in a magnetic field will feel a force in another direction. Now, this in HSC physics, this is a particular type of force. In more advanced physics, you see this just as an example of special relativity, where you've got two moving frames of references creating yet what looks like an electric field. We won't go there, but the other form of using electricity is the ability to actually create a force by having a current in a wire in an electric field, and you have the right-hand slap rule, which gives you the direction of force. The thumb is the direction of the current, the fingers are the direction of the line, and your palm is the resulting direction of the force. So there's these two things mean that electricity can be generated, transported, controlled, and used. And the use is under two main areas, ohmic heating and electromotive force. There are other finer details with it. Now, the aspect of DC distribution is essentially the use of a DC generator with which it has a commutator, which switches the flow of current as the flux through the coils which are subjected to an alternating magnetic field. Hello. Magnetic field produce an AC current, and you can convert that to a DC effect by having a switch which senses the rotational orientation of the coils and switches the wires back to front, or reverses the polarity of the wires, such that when the magnetic flux is reducing through the coils, the current goes in one direction. But when it is increasing, and there's a reverse polarity, you actually cross the wires over, and that's a commutator. Now, the issue with DC is that it has a doesn't have the ability to change the voltage of its transmission. With AC, we have another magnetic effect, where the actual, this is actually the third, I suppose, effect of wires. This is the, correction, the third application of electricity, and that's the, so I'll get to a shelter somewhere pretty soon, the ability of electricity to generate a magnetic field. So let's recap again. Electricity, they've got ohmic heating, the force, and the ability to generate a magnetic field. Now, with AC, you can use the magnetic field generated to simulate a generator, and so you can have you can have different levels, numbers of coils in a magnetic circuit, so to speak. So you can have a low voltage and high current on a few coils, coupled to and the number of volts per coil is the same. So if you have just one coil, you'll have a certain voltage. If you have 100 coils in the pickup, you'll have 100 times that voltage. So you're able to raise the voltage and drop the current. Now, this is important for distribution, because if you can reduce the current at which the power is distributed, the electricity is distributed, you can reduce the losses, because the wires which distribute the energy dissipate power, and the dissipation of power is determined by a simple equation: the volts times the current through the wire. And it's very, I suppose, hard, unless you get up there with a voltmeter between two parts of an electric circuit, to actually see what the current is, what the voltage is drop across. But it is easier to know through a measurement what the resistance is, so that V times I equation can be converted to a more easier to use equation, which covers just a particular part of the circuit, the transmission lines, and it's the voltage drop is I times R. So the power dissipated, which is V times I, is I squared R. So the actual power loss in lines drops off as the square of the current. So if you halve the current, you reduce the power loss in your power lines there by a factor of 4/10, by a factor of 100, and so on. So if you would drop the increase the voltage to 1,000, increase the voltage by 1,000, reduce the current by 1,000, same power transmission, the actual power loss is reduced by 1,000,000. Indeed, this is what's used in long-term transmission. So DC is an intrinsically inefficient form of distributing power because the voltage can't be increased. And so you're stuck at the voltage which you've generated the power at. It's hard to control. And if you use AC, you can use these magnetic coupling devices called transformers to increase the voltage and the lethality, of course, and then at the point of use, drop the voltage again, so you can actually sort of lift yourself out of the electrical energy loss. Now, obviously, having high voltage is quite expensive, but if all the users pay their money to a company which builds the high voltage transmission line, you're able to use this. Now, the answer that we have here is Edison. I just want to talk a little bit about Edison. So Edison had dubiously, I say, invented the light globe. When he filed for a patent, he found that a French group of scientists, much more low-key, had filed a patent, so he simply bought the patent there. So I don't know the name of the French inventor, but also he was a typical, we class him more as an entrepreneur than we say a scientist. It's very interesting about the code of ethics of a scientist. So he famously said, I'd have a light bulb operating for my electricity company. So he had the consumer need, which had pulled the consumer money out of the consumer's pocket, so they needed light. And he had something which meant that need of light would mean a need of electricity. And so this was a perfect American-style business model. So he made a typical sort of startup claim, I will have a light bulb by such and such a date. At the date, his light bulbs only lasted an hour. So he arranged this press release where the press people were ushered into a darkened sort of tent in a room to see the light bulb one by one. And of course, Edison would have a series of light bulbs and change them as each new person came in. So he was able to actually, by fraud or deception, make a press release. Now, this obviously doesn't fit with the scientific candor of openness, but it does fit with a model of technology uptake where there's a desire and a hype and overinvestment, and a lot of people lose a lot of money, but that money gets recycled into building the infrastructure or building the message in society to get going. Another aspect of it is that Edison employed Tesla as an engineer, and there's, I suppose, the, I call it psychopath or psychologically maladjusted, Edison listened to Tesla's ideas and put them down. He perhaps, you'd say simplistically, didn't like someone brighter than himself. He wanted to be the main light of the room. So when Tesla, who was Serbian with a heavy accent and not moneyed and not in the American culture, came along and suggested these things of AC electricity, he was not listened to. And furthermore, Edison didn't pay him salary, began to owe him money. Now, people rush and say he was busy or an oversight, but this is a pretty callous mental bully of Tesla, and it deeply affected Tesla, and he left. Now, to say the world has moved on, so the various things that Edison did, like electrocuting dogs and elephants, to show the danger of AC electricity, I'll get back to that, and not would be stopped by injunctions and protests. And nowadays, at least under Australian law, regardless of the contract, an Australian judge would wipe out sections of a contract which are unfair. So at least under Australian law, contracts have to be manifestly achievable, sensible and fair. They can't be lopsided or unjust. So a lot of this event happened. These events happened in the context of a society which is different from what we live in today. So you have the Edison, and his main contention was, or argument against AC, one was that he didn't control the intellectual property. He had his own market idea. He had a commercial idea, and he tried to attack AC electricity as dangerous. And indeed, it is a dangerous that if you touch AC voltage, it's actually at almost the ideal frequency. The Americans have 60 hertz. And Australians have 50 hertz, but both those frequencies are probably the most lethal frequencies for voltage to disrupt heart function and kill people. Though if you look at the elephant, the burning of the elephant didn't suffer a cardiac arrest. It was more sort of an ohmic event if you saw the smoke coming up from that. The next person in the list is Faraday. Now, Faraday is indeed a highly ethical scientist. He was ethical because he was not a Quaker, but in a religious, highly religious sect, and a very humble, person. He began life basically with a destitute father in London and working at 11 years old in a printing press. And quite famously, he had the job of printing and assembling the Encyclopedia Britannica, and when it came to the page of electricity, it said, "Marvellous idea, what is it? We don't understand it." And so Faraday, very poor, went around to the London expositions of electricity by Sir Humphrey Davy. And indeed, science was not established. Research science was not established. So if you wanted to make money, you either had to have money or make your money through through shows. So it's pretty hard to imagine this. And of course, British society reacted to this and introduced or began to fund institutions as a reaction to it. So Faraday was not of the upper class, but sat there taking notes, and being a bookbinder, he was able to take notes on electricity and bind the book of his notes and actually give it to Sir Humphrey Davy. And they sort of made fun of him, but Sir Humphrey Davy was involved in discovering the first elements, first reactive metals. And he unfortunately blew his face off and blinded himself temporarily. Now, an important part of this story is Napoleon. Napoleon thought he was a really nice person. Even though he was an enemy on the enemy side, he awarded him a French medal. And you can imagine having an enemy emperor that you really hate giving one of your celebrity scientists a medal. This caused a lot of upset in British society, and so he was to go over to Paris when the hostilities were over, and they were over when Napoleon was defeated in the first time around 1813. This is before Waterloo, and the British found this really hard to accept, and so they said, well, we're going to knight this scientist. So this is really the first scientist which got a knighting, got knighted and honoured, and it wasn't a direct thing, it was due to competition with the French, and so he's going to be knighted. Now, there is a problem, and it's quite hard to understand because I haven't lived in British society. I definitely didn't live in British society back then. But there was Lady Jane. Now, Lady Jane married a rich industrialist who then got knighted, and he was Sir whatever he was. And then he died. And then they said, oh, well, you're not part of the aristocracy. You've actually just married in. You have to be married to someone, and then they become knighted
for it to work. And so Lady Jane said, well, this is not going to be... She was no longer Lady Jane. This is not going to be good. What I'll do is I'll find someone who's going to be knighted and marry them first, you know, use my money to get them to marry me, and then I'll be a permanent lady. So when they sort of knight someone, they back then apparently they knighted both the husband and the lady also got knighted. Strange thing, but this meant that Lady Jane made an approach to Davy, who was eking out a living doing science shows, and Lady Jane thought, great, I can actually spend money and he'll just live a life of luxury travelling around Europe. And Davy thought, great, I can spend my time fully on science and not spend my time doing shows. So there's a basic misunderstanding. And so they got married and they were going to have a honeymoon in Paris. They were doing a grand tour, and wait for it, they were going to visit Ampere and Volta. So imagine having a honeymoon tour in which you're going to visit these people. And I don't think Lady Jane fully understood what was in Davy's mind, but Davy at the time had developed a friendship and a dependency on Faraday, who was assisting him with his work, because he'd taken careful notes and he had been previously injured. He'd obviously bounced back, but somehow Davy had talked to get Faraday to come on the tour, and they got into France on their journey to Paris, from the coast to Paris, and Lady Jane said, who's that in the carriage? And it was Faraday. So if you can imagine cutting to the next scene, poor Faraday was sitting on top of the coach with the servants. She wasn't going to be in the upper class coach. He was actually a commoner, so you have to get rid of him. So Faraday was on top of the coach, and of course it wasn't good weather. In fact, it was absolutely rained on their way to Paris. So this poor Faraday got out this dreadful journey at the Amperes with now Sir Davy and Lady Jane. And Lady Jane really disliked Faraday because he was simple and pure and unsophisticated. Poor Faraday there, and he was about to throw it in. He was no longer going to be a scientist and or work on science. And he was there, and Ampere's wife really looked after Faraday. And for many years, I couldn't work out exactly what are the dynamics here of someone who is just not, you know, in the cultural thing of actually treating commoner people as sort of inferior. So what was driving it here? And it's only recently that I found out that the Amperes had a very unhappy marriage and they weren't speaking to each other. And you can see that Ampere's wife would actually relate to someone else who's a bit displaced from the situation. So she was very hospitable to Faraday. I know a lot of people say, oh, there must be some sort of affair. That was definitely not the case with Faraday, who's a very not in that frame of mind. And if you read the stories of Faraday, this is absolutely not possible that there was any sort of affair there. But he was held. He was entertained, and they buoyed him back. The Ampers were nice to him, and he went on down into Italy to visit Volta. Now, Amper showed the force between two parallel wires, created a magnetic field and produced it, and Davy said, well, look, a force, we could actually get that force to go in a circle. So they had the famous Faraday motor. That was Davy's design, but he said to Faraday to make it. And this is a wire where the wire was able to go in a loop. The base of the wire was in mercury. Mercury conducts electricity. And this was able to make a basic motor. And eventually, all of this, the invention of the electric motor, is attributed to Faraday, and the invention of the transformer and the invention of a generator is all attributed to Faraday, although the actual generator, the story of the generator, when you read about it, is traced to just an electric motor which was driven. So an electric motor where you actually put the energy in will produce a current, and you can definitely find that. And this ability of a motor to act as a generator is called the back EMF. So a motor will rotate until it actually produces an electrical force which produces it. So the generation capability of an electric motor is called the back EMF, or the generation of electricity by that motor. On another question, I'll revisit Faraday. The next person, so Faraday was before the time of distributing electricity to cities, but the next person who was definitely involved was Tesla, and Tesla was an advocate of the AC generation. Tesla, there's just a few things. Perhaps what we would call him is having a learning disability or a social disability, he was very taken as a young kid by lightning storms. He was very frightened and very moved by them. But another really important thing is that he used to pat his cat. When he patted his cat, he had little sparks. You can imagine the electricity. And he said, "I wonder where that comes from." So that you can see a great understanding there. And of course, he's probably the wrong person to be bullied by Edison, being able to actually work out what that meant. And perhaps because he didn't have the social skills to get lawyers or to fight against it, he was, perhaps these were factors which meant that he was ideal for it. Now, he obviously produced the Tesla coil, which is a transformer, an air-cooled transformer, high frequency, which gives to high voltage. So you can get 9 volts converted to AC, which goes in high frequency in an air-cooled transformer, produces millions of volts. Or tens of thousands of volts, and you see this in a plasma ball. Now, of interest is that Tesla, I suppose, eventually was even duped by Westinghouse, the AC people, and he came up with a next generation idea. And his idea was to produce gigantic Tesla coils, which would produce lightning bolts, which would travel across the United States. Anything was possible. So he got sufficient funding. People said, "We've made heaps of money out of electricity. Let's go out to the next generation. What's coming next?" And so they built a very tall, I think 30 or 60 meter tall Tesla coil in New York. And this was on the coastal horizon. You could see the Statue of Liberty, but you could also see Tesla's coil standing up. And this was there right up to World War II, when they decided we would have to take this down. The main idea was it was a sort of a navigation point for U-boats who were going through across the coast. They'd be able to pick up the Tesla coil and work out where they're going. So Tesla quite famously had a incorrect but somehow working idea of electricity, a sense of electricity and the flux and how flux generated things. Similarly, Faraday also had an incorrect analysis of currents and magnetic fields. But unfortunately, or fortunately for us, it's what you're taught at school, and we'll get into that a bit later. And now Westinghouse was... So Tesla was a scientist, Faraday was a scientist, Edison, you really, it's very interesting. You probably couldn't class him as a scientist due to his ethical behavior. And it's interesting that you can talk about if someone is ethics is unethical, therefore we don't classify them as a scientist. Strange point, you might want to ask about that. And, you know, there's a talking point there. Westinghouse was not necessarily technically involved. He was a financier, and so the development of AC electricity required the customers, when they're buying the electricity, to buy a little bit of some high technology, which allowed that electricity to be delivered to them cheaply. And typical in the US, they a series of people around Buffalo in New York said, "Oh, we've got the Niagara Falls. We can use the energy of that with this new electricity." If you can remember, electricity is, sorry, there's a whole lot of parrots around the place. It's lovely being up here in Glenbrook. They're pretty amazing creatures. But getting back, electricity is this ideal transfer of energy device. And so they, I think it was only for $100,000, they had a $100,000 prize for the person who could build the first electricity station. And the US still do this, they have prizes and money things and let companies compete for the prize. Now the prize itself over it has a sort of multiplier effect on the amount of investment, and so Westinghouse was able to successfully generate electricity from Niagara Falls, the first hydroelectric power station, almost by definition. And this iconic story of electricity generation basically extinguished the dreams of Edison for a while, so people could see how this was done. And the business finance model is a sort of very interesting and important thing. So Westinghouse basically changed its business from electricity to finance, and you have General Electric, GE Money, and their major product now is financing. And financing is all to do with people's future dreams and their future anticipation of making money. So with modern capitalism, you can actually generate or borrow money on a plan into the future. And so this is Westinghouse's view. So I hope in this podcast to have covered in depth some of the basic understanding behind this small question, and I'll move on to the next one soon. Thank you very much for listening.